Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman. Kellen Olson's beside me, and we're joined by a special guest, Cole Zwicker from the Stepien. How's it going?
Go home, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Cole, if you didn't know, is a draft guy. The Stepien is all draft, and since the Suns have the first pick, we thought this would be a good jumping-off point because they have a unique view of the whole DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic debate. Can you just give us, Cole, a rundown of where you have these guys ranked and why, briefly?
So I have Luka Doncic number one in his own tier. I think he is the transcendent talent of the draft. For our philosophy standpoint on the site, we kind of rank in peers generally, and it deviates a little bit based on the writer or the contributor as far as their philosophy goes. We don't all share the same philosophies. For me, I kind of rank based on, at the top, you want transcendent kind of generational type talents. Luka has arguments to be that. If you work your way down, I think that I have Jaren Jackson in my second tier by himself. I think he's really safe as far as a floor prospect. And he has that high-level outcome as well as being high-level defensive big that you just don't see very often in conjunction with three-point shooting. So he's alone in my second tier. And then after that, it's kind of an open territory. It deviates within the writers. We have a pretty big tier three as far as a bunch of bigs in there. Wendell Carter, Marvin Bagley, DeAndre Ayton, of course, and Michael Porter. It just depends on what your preference is as a philosophy guy. Do you want a big who can space the floor? Do you want more of an offensive big inside? So that's kind of where it tails off for us when we deviate from one another.
So where I wanted to take this conversation going is something me and you have talked about on a lot of different podcasts, where draft philosophy in terms of fit. Because where you look at the draft and how you look at the draft really depends on who you think the team should take, because it goes well beyond just saying this guy is the best prospect, this guy is the second best prospect, except when you're picking number one, in my opinion. I think you just take the best prospect you feel. If the Suns had a really great center right now, I would still say if you think DeAndre Ayton's the best guy, you just take him because you're at number one, unless you feel like it's really a 50-50 debate. So this is something that Suns fans have been talking a lot about, because with Luka Doncic, the team already has Devin Booker, they already have Josh Jackson, they already have TJ Warren, so they already have a couple of wings. And then at center, they have Tyson Chandler, Alex Len is probably gone, they have Alan Williams, so there's a big opening there for DeAndre Ayton to fill. So first tell me a little bit about how you think about it in terms of the choice, and then in terms of taking the best player overall or fit or whatever, and then how you see someone like Luka Doncic fitting into the Suns with a crowded wing area already.
Yeah, so I think overall, when you look back historically, the number one overall pick is the best mechanism to acquire star-level talent that's available. Most teams are not going to be able to acquire those kinds of guys in free agency or via trade. And if you look back historically, just the number one pick is usually a transcendent talent. That's where you get your Anthony Davises. So if you look back historically, too, the top players from each class, usually the top-end talent differentiates themselves regardless of fit. So James Harden played Oklahoma City, of course. He didn't get to fully exhibit his talents, but he goes to Houston, and he looks like the second-best player in that class. So overall, I think that at the top, you just have to identify the right talent. You have to identify the star-caliber players, and they're going to shine regardless of situation. So that's the argument for taking just generally the best player available at the top. That's also the argument for ranking in tiers, because if you get to the third tier, for example, and you have four guys in that, and one guy's a point guard, one guy's a center, and you think the talent is similar, that is going to be probably favorite team fit. But as far as the elite caliber players, they're going to be elite, and you just need to figure out who those guys are. As far as the fit with Luka and the Suns, I love it. I don't understand the fit concerns as far as – I know a lot of people have defensive concerns, so they view position by who you guard. So there's been a lot of talk about Luka being a point guard or a wing. He's clearly not going to defend point guards, but that doesn't mean he can't initiate your offense. Like, look at James Harden. He's a point guard on offense, and he never guards point guards. He can't guard point guards. So that's how I see Luka being utilized. You can roll out him with Josh Jackson, Devin Booker. If you draft a guy like DeAnthony Melton at 16, he can guard opposing point guards. Then you have your center. I see Luka more playing the defensive four, at least his valuable Suns lineups, and then initiating their offense at times. But it's going to be a ball motion, ball-moving type of system. He's going to be able to capitalize on that end, too. So I wouldn't get bogged down in positions as far as that goes. Luka's a versatile player. He can play both on and off ball. Off ball, especially at a really high level. So as far as viewing him in the prism of point guard versus wing, he's an elite ball handler. He's a situational elite ball handler. He can also play off the ball, and that's incredibly valuable.
Absolutely. Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think it's interesting that you brought up Luka at the four, because that brings up a point that I wanted to make with the conversation with you in regards to the conversation around Ayton or Doncic around Phoenix has obviously really picked up since they got the number one pick. And where that has led the conversations is something we're obviously not going to really go into deep here. But one thing about DeAndre Ayton and his physicality, of course, is the first thing that stands out to him. For me, I think the thing that no one is talking about with Doncic is that this kid is 6'8", 230. He's a big, big wing. And if you obviously put him in certain matchup situations, he can exploit them. And I think hopefully under some more conditioning and just strength programs, etc. He's at P3 a little bit a while ago, and he's going to go back there this summer, hopefully. I think you can look at him in those situations and have him guard fours. What do you see from him physically, Cole, in terms of being able to handle those matchups at the four on defense and then exposing some matchups offensively?
Yeah, exactly. I think that with more physical training, like you mentioned, P3, you want to get him in better shape. He is strong, but he looks like he has athletic frame upside. He doesn't eat right. If you read articles about him, he's not on like an NBA strength and conditioning program yet. I think there's athletic potential there as well, and he has the frame. The floor spot in the NBA is like the move spot, in my opinion. That's where you can dictate what kind of offense, what kind of defense you want to run. And the modern trend is playing like a combo forward at that spot, getting more skill on the floor. I think with Luka there at the four, you can catch teams in cross matches in transition. We have an opposing four. Let's say, I don't know, I don't want to pick on Frank, but let's say they play the Hornets. You get cross-matched on Luka Doncic. That's a really valuable matchup to exploit with the ball. And I think that Luka, that's where he would have the agility advantage on offense if you actually get him matched up against opposing fours. So that's kind of how I would do it.
There's this kind of, I guess, general sense that Luka's not a great athlete. Where do you kind of put him as far as in NBA terms, what he's good at, what he's not? Obviously, he's a little slow as far as first step. Where do you think that will limit him, and will it completely shut down his ability to drive and create off the dribble for himself and his teammates?
I think most importantly, it's going to be troublesome in isolation settings against bigger wings, because he's not going to have the first step advantage in those situations. I think that that's going to be a little troublesome. But the thing about Luka is that he can negate some of that with his strength, and he can play pick and roll at such a high level. If you study Joe Johnson, for example, he's not super shifty as far as like straight line bursts or like raw speed, but he's really good at changing direction, and his handle is elite. And I think that's what Luka has. He has an elite handle. He can utilize his body to create separation. He's really good off the ball as far as go and catch situations. That's something that's a little underrated with him. People want to always focus on the ball, but off the ball, like, his first step is pretty damn good. It's reminiscent kind of Jason Tatum, that he jabs hard to the right and he'll just blow past guys. So I think there's some underrated athleticism. And again, I think you're not seeing the full Luka Doncic athletically right now. You're going to see, we've seen guys in the past like Jamal Murray who weren't that athletic in college. They go to NBA strength and conditioning programs and they get a little bit of juice. They get a little bit of burst. I think that's all Luka needs, is a little bit more pop around the rim, and then you can really fully utilize that frame.
Cole, there are plenty of Suns fans, I would argue, to say that most of the Suns fans listening right now not only believe that DeAndre Ayton is the guy at number one, they don't even think it's a question. So for you specifically, who has him two tiers below Doncic, I think it's kind of not an argument to have who's the better prospect. What I want to ask you specifically is, with everything you like about DeAndre Ayton, where do you see him in terms of not maybe a ceiling, but in terms of how a good outcome would be for him in the NBA? Because that's what you're looking at specifically with Ayton from this argument's perspective as a number one guy.
I think a good outcome for him would be like a combination of LaMarcus Aldridge with like an Andre Drummond kind of rebounding prowess and athletically, which is a really good player. That's like an all-star caliber player, no question. But if you look historically at the teams that make the finals, you don't really find a player like that. A high usage guy that's an interior scorer that shoots mid-range jump shots and doesn't play high level defense. But he can really rebound the ball. He can score over the top. There's no question there. I have issues with him extending his range based on his flat arc to NBA 3. So that's a really nice player. I'm not saying that DeAndre Ayton is a bad prospect, but the way I look at things is, how do you contribute to winning basketball, not how you put up 20 and 10 numbers and make 5 All-Star games. If you have a chance to draft a generational talent who can contribute to winning at a high level, that's kind of how I favor it. But the thing with Ayton, I guess, it's his limitations are in valuable areas for bigs. So defensive, protecting the rim, defensive awareness, reacting quickly off the ball, and then offensively just floor spacing. He's not a great ball handler, but he has some action in there. I think you guys have given proper praise to his ability to pass out of double teams. I think he's really astute there. He's very patient as far as taking dribbles, but he's not a high-level quick decision maker. So there's a lot of things in his game that just don't translate perfectly to the modern game as far as being a skill five and then being a defensive five. But he's really advantage.
So where we want to take the conversation next is with Luka and Ayton specifically, but looking at trade-up options, because Ryan McDonough has said time and time again this season that they want to be aggressive this offseason. They have so many draft picks. They have a lot of young players they can move. They have a lot of expiring one-year deals they can also move. And where you look at that specifically in this draft is they pick 16th, and there's a lot of guys that they can draft in really the 7 to 12 range that not only would be great prospects for them that would help fill a lot of long-term needs, these guys that could potentially help them right now. So let's do this in two questions first. First, let's say the Suns do take someone like DeAndre, not someone like DeAndre Ayton, because he is DeAndre Ayton. He is someone who exists. So if the Suns take DeAndre Ayton number one, who are you looking at in really that 6 to 12 range as someone you would love to see the Suns trade up for and get?
I mean, everybody's going to play to Trae Young, right? Because those are the two clear need areas as far as point guard and center. I think that becomes kind of untenable defensively with Young paired with Booker paired with Ayton. I don't know how that anchors even a top 15 defense likely. It'll be fun as all hell on offense, but I think that caps their ceiling to winning. But Trae Young could easily fall to that range. I mean, Orlando at 6, everybody has him there. Their history, as far as John Hamm is drafted, history points more towards, you know, physical tools, length, having the positional size. So I'm uncertain about that. A couple other guys, Michael Porter, depending on what his injury status is, you could see him. I think it's probably a soft floor, Cleveland at 8 or something, but he's a guy who's really intriguing if he checks out medically. The Suns are potentially working him out, I'm guessing, at the number one pick. I'm guessing they'll also get his medical information because he thinks he's the best player in the draft, so that's going to be an important input. He's someone who we've talked about in the past, Kellen, to provide that secondary scoring option around Devin Booker. Outside of that, you have Mikal Bridges, who would also provide the 3-and-D wing equity. I don't care how many wings you have on a roster, they're going to be valuable, especially deeper in the playoffs. And honestly, outside of that, if you take Ayton, I would look wing. If you take Luka at number one, I think that Wendell Carter is a guy that you really look at who could really fall. If he doesn't go up to 7, as far as to Chicago at 7, I think he could fall all the way to the 12th pick. That's going to be cheaper to trade up, assuming the Clippers don't move those 12 and 13 picks move up themselves. I think you could really look for Suns, if they take Luka 1, to move up for Wendell Carter at maybe 12 or 13.
How about 16, where I feel like there's going to be one guy in that mid-lottery tier that falls there? What do you see as far as availability there as best talent?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm really high on De'Anthony Melton, personally. That might be a little rich to take him 16 for most people in the league because the shooting is so dicey, even though he has made mechanical improvements. But I really do like his fit next to Booker as far as just being able to defend at a really, really high level for his size. We're talking about a generational type, a point guard defender and just a team defender. His instincts are off the charts. But other than that, you can see, I think maybe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander could be there. I think it's unlikely, but it could be. He's maybe the fall guy from that top echelon range that is in that area. Zaire Smith, probably the best functional athlete in the drafts. Possibly he can be there. It depends on his interviews. I thought he was kind of underwhelming at the combine. He obviously measured in a little bit under what we thought he was at 6'4", the 6'9", wingspan, only being 198 pounds. Other than that, I don't know. Like, Jonte Porter, out of shape. I love the kid. I think he's a lottery talent as far as perimeter-oriented five. But that might be a little rich for the Suns' blood, too. So there's going to be a lot of wings in this draft. I mean, Troy Brown could be there out of Oregon, versatile wing. He could dribble pass and shoot. So I would look at that area as a potential value area. Like you noted, I mean, Robert Williams could be a pick two depending on who they take at one. So there's a lot of guys in that range.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Robert Williams and Mitchell Robinson specifically because it's a very weird draft for centers. Last year, we had about 400 centers in the 15 to 40 range, and it was just really a crapshoot in terms of who worked out, and we still really don't know who is going to work out. But it's really limited in this draft in that range. So say we're in a situation where the Suns do take Luka Doncic or they take DeAndre Ayton and they just want to add another young center. Jonte is someone you mentioned as well, but among the centers in that group and really going to the end of the first round, round. Is there anyone who stands out to you specifically? Because to me, they're all pretty risky, and I don't really see the fit for anyone at 16 unless the Suns were to take Luka and they were high on someone like Jonte.
Exactly right. I think that they all come with some amount of risk. Jonte has, I think, some immaturity issues as well in conjunction with being out of shape. You want to see more effort for him. He might not even enter the draft officially. He hasn't officially declared yet. Robert Williams, I think he's the most Clint Capella type big, and that's someone who the Suns have been rumored to have interest in. But you have some legitimate concerns off the ball defensively as far as awareness, and his skill set is pretty limited to like a passer on short rolls and then a dive threat. He doesn't have much skill as far as spacing the floor. Mitchell Robinson is a complete unknown for most guys. Of course, he withdrew from the combine. We don't really know exactly why. He might have a first-round promise, but he's someone who has had maturity issues in the past, and that has scared off some teams. I know that for a fact. So there is a risk there at 16. I'm not sure if that's where the value is, even though I'm higher on Jonte Porter. He'd be the guy out of that group that I would choose pretty confidently. But the wing value is probably going to be what eclipses big value at pick 16.
I just wanted to ask you about Chandler Hutchison just because he got that, apparently got a promise from the Bulls or somebody a little past the Suns. Do you like him as a prospect? I know 16 would probably be too high for most people, but what do you think about him?
He's intriguing just because he does have a high character profile in conjunction with the physical tools you look for from a wing, 6'7", 7-foot wingspan. I think the idea of him is better than the reality. We don't really know if he can shoot the ball. He couldn't all his first 2 years. Then he started working with Damian Lillard's trainer, and he's progressed pretty well there off the catch, but I'm not confident enough that he can shoot. His best overall skill, frankly, is attacking closeouts, which I'm not sure if he draft that guy in the first round. If his best skill is like his first step, long stride, attacking closeouts. He's not a great ball handler. He's okay in big space. He can pass functionally. I'm just not sold on his defense at all. Watching more tape on him, I think that off the ball, he doesn't look great. His stance is a little awkward. And his overall basketball IQ doesn't scream like top 20 pick for me from a wing.
Cole, one of the things I've learned about the most watching the draft the past couple of years and doing rankings and everything is that once we get to like 12 or 13 in the draft, the Celtics will say, yeah, we're just going to take Gershon Yabusele. He's our guy. We're just going to take him. We don't care. Yeah, we're going to take Bruno Caboclo. It's teams just kind of take their guy and go with it, and rankings kind of go out the door at that point, or teams just don't really differentiate that much the value from 15 to 40, and they just take their, they have their guy ranked that high. So I think really anyone that you see on rankings from 15 all the way to 40 could obviously be available when the Suns pick at 31. So in that range of prospects, De'Anthony Melton is a guy who I don't think will fall to 31, but is probably the other name to bring up here. But outside of him, who are some guys in like that Shake Milton, Jacob Evans, Landry Shamet range that you like there at 31?
You mentioned Jacob Evans, I think. Just under 6'6", multi-purpose wing, plays both sides of the floor. I love his shooting mechanics. They're a little lower, they don't profile that well over contest, but as a spot-up shooter, open guys, got that one motion release. He can dribble, pass, and shoot. High defensive IQ as far as team defense awareness. So he's a kid I really like at 31 if he's there. He can definitely fall. Josh Okogie out of Georgia Tech officially declared today. He had a stellar combine as far as looking enormous compared to most other perimeter players at the combine. 6'4", 7-foot wingspan, 210-pound frame. Really quick laterally. He's a pretty awesome horizontal athlete. You just worry a little bit about the finishing acumen. He doesn't have the highest basketball IQ, but at 31, I think that he's a potential two-way wing, and you don't often find those guys. So he's another guy I would look at. Those two guys stand out above everybody else at that position. Again, De'Anthony Melton, I think that he's the clear guy if he's there. That would be an incredible fit. His instincts at 6'3", even though he's a little undersized for a point guard, but if he's playing next to two other primary ball handlers, I think he can really cut. He knows how to play at a supremely high level, and that'd be the move guy for me. I think that he could be a top 12 value at 31.
All right, I'm going to circle back to the very beginning of the draft to wrap this up. If you were putting money and putting your opinions aside, who do you think the Suns will take number one?
I'm going to go Luka Doncic just because of the ties to Igor. I think they're going to know how to optimize him as far as in the scheme that they want to run. If you watch Luka play overseas, I do think that his game's mischaracterized. In playing for Real Madrid, I don't think he was really optimized as far as a lot of his actions were just straight kick and roll without a lot of ball movement. If you really get him in the flow of the offense, I think the Suns are going to figure out a way to maximize him. And just the playmaking he can provide can change a franchise as far as trajectory. He's the one guy that you can really see coming into Phoenix's culture and it changing. You know, the ball starts moving. You have that fluid system. We've seen this with Lonzo Ball, and I think that Luka is a much better on-ball prospect with the ball than Lonzo Ball is. So I think that's ultimately going to win out, but that is – I would bet on it for sure because, I mean, traditionally, NBA executives, it's going to be really tough to pass on these physical tools. Just the pressure of taking someone like that and or the pressure of passing on someone like that and him panning out, that looks really bad. It's much more defensible to take DeAndre Ayton number one and him not pan out than it is for taking Luka Doncic number one with all the stereotypes about European players not being supreme athletes and then Luka busting. So it's a toss-up to me. I'm going to say that logic and reason went out and Luka goes one, but it would not surprise me either way.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us. Cole Zwicker from The Stepien. You can check him out on the interwebs.